Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Heretic Hammer Podcast. I am your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
And so today, we're talking kind of our last big hobbying section before we get into playing and building some games of 40K. And that is going to be a deeper dive into painting.
Ooh.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, you don't want to show up to your first game and be the person that has all gray miniatures or only primed miniatures.
It's just before we get started, we should be clear, though, is there anything mechanics-wise that is affected by whether or not your miniatures are painted?
Technically, yes, actually.
Okay, that's what I was curious about.
Yeah, so it's actually a new rule with 10th edition.
Ooh.
And if your models are fully painted in a tournament setting, this generally also means based. Generally it also means if they're based, but like a lot of times like shops and stuff might give you leniency on if they're based or not, as long as they're actually the models are painted themselves. But if your whole army that you brought, no matter what the points, like the whole army you bring for that points cost, if they are all painted at the end of the game, you get 10 extra points.
Wow.
Which results in a meme where there's the, when the rules lawyer has been hounding me all game about the rules, and then I notice it's the end of the game, he's beating me by 5 points, but I notice not all of his models are painted.
So it has to be all the models. Every model that's in play has to be fully
right,
painted.
Right, exactly. It's the full army paint bonus. It's 10 points. And it can matter sometimes, for sure. You know? When we play, it'll be on TTS, so it won't matter. Mm-hmm. Technically, we could apply the points at the end. But when you both have the points, then it really doesn't matter if you apply it. It only really matters when one of you doesn't. But that being said, it's also honestly like, I would say, yeah, it's only good to point that rule as well. Obviously in a tournament setting, but also in a setting when you really want to be petty. Like with your friends, I don't recommend pulling that one out. I don't recommend pulling out the painted army. Like, unless you like have it well set in there, I don't recommend pulling that one on your friends. Don't be a dick to your friends unless your friends are cool with it and they pissed you off. However, if the rules lawyer has been pissing you off all game and it's your random shop, then pull it out. Absolutely. Make them pay. But nevertheless, we did talk about in our original hobby episode, we went over kind of the basics, a lot of the basics of like kind of what should you avoid? What are some of the things to kind of get into? But we didn't really get into some of the, you know, the general, just what are things to get into with painting? And I was going to kind of do this as well with the actual model building. Like essentially I was going to kind of like, you know, build a model as part of the episode. And I'd kind of go over the things that I think are there, like, should be, maybe could be avoided, what you should look into. And maybe that is potentially an episode still. If you want it, you can let me know in the comments. But my main thing, really, that I think is just the only thing to really avoid is to make sure when you decide to build, like, when you get that 40K unit box, make sure that you look up what are the rules for this unit in the game of 40K, right? Because that way then you don't build a unit that has like 4 different heavy weapons and you can't run it that way. And then you're screwed because you glued them all together, right? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money to throw into a mistake.
Certainly.
So do look that up. And that is easily a thing to look up to with nowadays, especially with the free rules that are out there for 40K. And then with tools like New Recruit and Wahapedia, those are things that can be very helpful. And those will help guide you on like, what is the configuration of this unit? Like, what are the weapons that you can choose from that? You can figure it out. And luckily with Kill Team, if you're building a Kill Team box, like it says Kill Team on it, then you can just follow the instructions because Kill Team will have the Kill Team rules. So that is just what it is. So don't worry in that scenario. Otherwise, everything else is just kind of follow the instructions in the book. And, you know, just be careful about potentially literally cutting something off of, like, don't cut the arm of the model. Just pay attention. But other than that, I thought painting had a lot more stuff to get into with it. Mm-hmm. So with paintings, there's kind of two realms to look into, obviously. So what we're going to kind of get into is, like, what are some of the paints that are available that at least I know of? Obviously, you can go over ones that you use, because just because it's you good, or just because another hobby uses it, doesn't make it bad. And inherently, there's probably a lot of switching between the two. And then what are the forms of painting, and like when you're actually applying, and some of the kind of general advice that goes along with that. So let's start off with like what paints are out there, because, you know, you might hear like, oh, with Warhammer, we use acrylic paints. And then you might just go to like Michael's and just get, or Hobby Lobby or what, or Walmart, and just get like the whatever brand random acrylic paint that's in a bottle that you could get there. And while that technically is not, there's nothing technically incorrect. It's not unusable. Acrylic. Yes. It's generally going to be so thick that in order to make it properly usable on a model, you're going to need to do a lot of work.
This is going to be the case with most acrylic paints, is that because of them being thicker than your other paint types, you're going to basically need to thin them out. You'll need to use a thinner before you actually start applying them on your models.
Which, that's the thing, is that with war, especially war game paints or hobby paints, even just hobby paints for that matter, they generally are made slightly thinner to start with. So it means you don't have to do as much work, because you'd have to use a lot more thinner if it was like rando acrylic paint that's like designed to like be painted onto a glass or a vase. That you generally want to have a very thick paint. You don't for modeling. So that's kind of the big thing. And luckily, though, there are plenty of brands that aren't really that much of any more expensive. They're generally, if anything, maybe they're like price per volume isn't maybe as good, arguably. But honestly, renting them, nothing terribly wrong with them. But I will go over what are some of the more popular brands that you'll find around the 40K hobby, and kind of my quick opinion on each. And then obviously, if you have any as well, you can add so as well, Dylan.
Yeah, this will be a fun, it's going to be an interesting episode in that way, because I actually do have experience. I've painted a few minis myself, and I've also done, I haven't done a ton of it, but I've painted Gunpla models before. And the rules aren't one for one between those two, because they're obviously very different types of models, but a lot of the rules around, you know, what types of paint to use for different applications, they pair up pretty well.
Right, exactly. So to start off with, because we were talking about the Games Workshop game, Warhammer 40K, we should talk about Citadel, which is GW's paint, and is generally okay. There are plenty of people who swear by it, who use it all the time. I think they cost more than what they are worth. Like, I think they're essentially like value isn't just as good. I think you get fairly small pots for more money than other hobby paints, that some of them honestly even are of better value, like in terms of like the paint. For example, I know I talked about this last time, but Korax White and White Scar are two of the most hated paints in all of the 40K hobby. Korax White especially, it will clump like immediately. You open that pot, no matter how much you shake it, after like you've had for less than like a week, it's just a clumpy mess. And then it goes on the model and it's barely white. It's just not great. White Scar, I actually don't think is as bad. I think if you're like forced at gunpoint, you have to get a Citadel color white paint I think White Scar is at least not as bad. You thin it out enough. It's a good enough white, right? But in general, a lot of GW's paints just are more expensive. Like, their contrast paints are awesome. One of their pink contrast paints has been the main color for my sister's army. They have a lot of great other contrast paints. They're super good. Their yellow contrast is actually really good. But that's the thing, right? Like, it's just about finding where your value is. It's just, I think for every dollar, I don't think it hits as good as others in the, you know, competition with it. Otherwise, next up, probably the second most common one you'll find, especially in local game stores, is Army Painter.
Yes. They're
personally one of my favorite brands for contrast paints. I love their Speed Paint series. I don't know anything about the Speed Paint 1.0 series. I guess it was more of like a thing with like the way it would settle after a while or something. But the current Speed Paint series is great. They also, with their new Fanatics lineup, have a good user friendliness, or especially new user friendliness, because now they essentially have a color code capping system. You know, where they have white as your standard like acrylics. They have reds for your washes, greens for your effects, and then colors for metallics as well. So it's nice because then you can kind of get all of your general, obviously all those are technically acrylic, but you know what I mean? They're types of acrylic paint. Mm-hmm. And that part's really nice. And then this is the first of the rest of the brands that I'll bring up that also have the mixing balls in their pots, which are incredibly helpful because they just help when the paint, especially with contrast paint, it will kind of settle and shift because there's obviously like the thinning solution that's in the speed paint or the contrast paint. And then there's the actual pigments and those will separate. Now all you need to do is shake them up and they're fine. But
yeah,
with the mixing balls, it doesn't take as much shaking.
Which is nice.
Yeah. But generally then the acrylic paint also is perfectly good and really in the and like everything else about it. They have a great solid kind of route to go with. It's just their speed paint is possibly my favorite of what they offer.
Yeah, I have definitely used the majority of my painting experience has been using acrylic paints. A lot of the times it was, you know, it was very easy to acquire it, but also in general a little bit easier to use, you know, more cost effective overall, but yeah.
Yeah, Army Painter is generally fairly cost effective. The last one we'll talk about is possibly the most, but it has its own things about it, which we'll get into. But Army mm-hmm. Painter is good for having both a wide range, but then also being cost effective. So it's kind of hits like two routes. Otherwise, next up is Monument Hobbies Pro Acryl. They are awesome, like standard acrylic paints, like so not speed paints, but like or contrast. But I don't think they have any contrast. I think they have like really light ones, but otherwise they have like, I think mainly they just have like your standard acrylic hobby paint. But the Pro Acryl is great for that like normal acrylic paint. I feel like if they had a contrast paint, I'd probably end up being a fan of it too. But they generally are a little bit more, but they also are slightly bigger in terms of volume. So it's kind of like a worthy trade-off, you know, like you're getting more for more, right? You're not just getting more for like just quality. You're getting also more volume. So that's totally fine. And the other reason they're really nice and the reason I like using them as a standard acrylic for just like normal painting, even for airbrush painting, is because they are generally thinner to start with. They, out of all the brands, they are probably the thinnest out of the box, or out of the bottle, I guess, which is really nice because you don't need to do nearly as much work for thinning. Like they're very much kind of on that, like for every two drops, you can just do like one drop of water and it'll thin out perfectly fine. You don't need much thinning at all. It's really nice. You may even honestly need 3-to-1 in some cases with Pro Acryl. So I think they're a really good, really good brand to go with, especially with the number of, they have kind of a lot of fun, like special colors because of their creator series or their signature series paints that are from like different painters. And they're all just, it's cool because they are like kind of unique colors. Like the one I have for my Exodites called Dark Jade. Like it's just not a color that the other brands really have.
Yeah.
And then finally for the brands that I'm going to mention, because these are the ones that I've made good use of explicitly, is Vallejo. You'll also see it kind of with a big box label that'll just say like model color acrylic colors. But the technical brand is Vallejo. And these are classic for modeling. They have some of the most inexpensive paints. They have none of the fancy extra stuff. You know, they don't even have mixing balls in them as far as I remember. No, for sure. You know, they're no fuss, but they're inherently tried and true, right? Like they have been used in just hobbying. So that includes even the classic hobbying of like model airplanes and trains and stuff like that, you know, tanks. This is one that like has existed through all of that. And you'll find actually their metallic paints, because of that history of being, you know, kind of honing their craft, especially with like airplane modeling and tank modeling, a lot of their metallics are some of the best metallic paints. They are a specific kind of like bottle type, but you'll see it's like, you know, Vallejo metallic something. It's a slightly bigger bottle with a black label, which differentiates it from its normal white label, but they are some of the best metals that you can get, which makes sense because inherently that translates with kind of their main niche that they had. But this then obviously translates well for the war vehicles that we use in 40K. Also notably, they have one of the best whites that are out there. Technically the best white is the Proacryl. Proacryl white. I know. It's like super just white. But the gloss white from Vallejo is very much a strong second place on like just having a really solid, just pure white. Just a neutral white. Not gonna like be a little too dark. You know, it is just where you want it to be to either, you know, like make one bright spot, set up your highlights, whatever you need a white paint for. There are definitely other brands out there that are even widely used. You know, AK paints are out there. I've never used it, so I can't really comment on it. I do know it is generally fairly inexpensive, but they've just never had colors that necessarily... Or they never had colors or features that necessarily draw my eye, but they are definitely out there and an option. I don't know if there's any paints that you know of that I didn't mention.
No, that's most of the main ones that I'm familiar with. I was curious, do Warhammer models, are there instances of people using like markers? Like, are there any like dedicated markers for doing like fine line work on Warhammer models, or is it almost entirely just paint that's being used?
It's pretty much always just paint. I don't know of markers that I guess are small enough, because that'd be the big thing, right? I know there's probably plenty of people who have done it on knights and on larger Tau models and stuff like that, but I don't really know honestly about if there would be a whole lot of functionality for your standard size models, but I'm sure there's definitely a place for it, and I don't think there's necessarily a reason you couldn't, but I don't see it often in kind of the very large quantity of painting videos that I have stumbled across. So it doesn't seem to be as much of a thing, because I know that, yeah, in Gunpla that is a lot more widely used.
Yes, and a lot of that has to do with because of how Gundam are designed. There is a lot of like lines within the model kits and the designs, because, you know, it's a lot of smaller pieces that are kind of being snapped together So you'll usually have, like, there's markers for kind of general coloring, but then there's also fine tip markers specifically for panel lining, which is to kind of intentionally make, like, it kind of boldens those lines that exist in the model and kind of makes everything pop out a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't really see a reason that you couldn't, especially with like something like Tau in that scenario. Mm-hmm. I think in some scenarios, maybe it is just, yeah, it probably just comes down to, you know, how thick the actual marker maybe is or is not. Mm-hmm. But I think like that is probably the main thing. Otherwise, it's probably just partly a habitual kind of like just not a common thing because just people don't learn it when they are getting into it because they're learning from the people who essentially come before them. And most of those people who are they're learning from have always been doing Warhammer instead of coming from Gunpla, doing Warhammer and then teaching people Warhammer. So that would be my guess as to kind of why that is for sure the case, but I can't necessarily say that for a fact. But I don't see any reason outside of like just marker thickness that you couldn't. I imagine there's many ways that you could use the markers to really cool effect, you know, especially like if you do end up getting like a Tau model or something, I think in that scenario, you probably could find a lot of use to that. But speaking of the painting, we're going to talk about actually some of the common forms of painting that you will see. And I'll kind of go over like essentially like this like small tutorial-esque description of how they work. Because, you know, I talked a little bit about some of the functions to painting, you know, in the hobby episode, right? Like we talked about, yeah, you know, I made a brief mention about slap chop. We talked about, you know, not getting the airbrush too soon. You know, we talked about, you know, kind of like you don't need to get all the GW or just like go get the really expensive brush set, right? But what we didn't talk about exactly was what are these types of painting and like what entails with them, right?
Sure.
So we'll start off obviously with kind of just like the standard, just like normal acrylic painting, right? It's just all brush all the time. Maybe you use some speed paints. Maybe you just use regular acrylic. Go from there. I mean, technically, you could also use enamel or oils. I'm just going to say this right now. Don't use enamel and oils until, like, you've really gotten into painting.
Yeah, you're going to find that acrylic is kind of the more easier one to start with, for sure.
Yeah. This is a scenario where... So the way I'm going to kind of describe this, though, is going to be kind of like you just bought the, you know, the kind of intro starter paint kit from GW, or you went to the store and you bought like, you know, a set of paints and like one or a couple of brushes. Or maybe you're going to go to the store and you want to know what are the brushes that even if say you are going to a Hobby Lobby or Michael's or whatever, and you want to find the decent but cheap brush, what are the ones specifically you need to look for? Because, like, it's one thing if we just tell you, you know, get those brushes, but not what type of brushes. Because you don't need to get every brush, but it's good to have some. And so the first thing that we'll kind of get into is the paint itself. And that is going to be the first advice with this is going to be to thin your paints. We talked about this at the beginning of the episode. I'm going to talk about it more here.
Yes, very
important. This is quite possibly the best first advice that I can give to any new painter. You know, for many people who have just painted anything before, it generally seems like common knowledge even to maybe like think about, oh, I need to just remove the globs from the paintbrush, right? Like even when you're in art class in like elementary, middle, and high school, right? You will be taught like, hey, when you pick up some of the paint with your brush, remove some of the excess on your palette or on a, you know, on a paper towel or something, right? Just a little bit of the stuff that's off the top and then put it on your canvas. We need to go one step further. or technically it's not even further, but we need to take one step before that. And when you put the paint onto your palette, and yes, I do expect you somewhat to have some type of palette, whether or not it's a paper plate, a plastic one you buy from the art store, or even just like the tile from Home Depot, like the sample tile.
So, for example, I use, when I first started painting models a few years back, I bought, you can often find even just on like Amazon or at like local art and hobby stores, you know, they'll have the small plastic palettes where it gives you six, you know, cups to just like put your paint into. So for like Gunpla, you know, one of them is my paint palette where I'll, you know, mix various paints in, but then I use the second one for all the individual parts. Like if I'm constructing parts of a model and I don't want to lose, like, you know, if there's little parts to it, then I'll use that second palette to just place my parts somewhere that's, it's easy to find them and not lose them, so I can then grab them later once I am putting the whole model together. So it's good to even, you don't need a huge palette. You can just have like a small little thing, like the little 6 or 8 cup ones that they sell. It just gives you a nice way to organize your paints and the pieces to your model as well.
Which is also precisely what I have. And that's the big thing is, you know, it's just good to have to like put your paint into something going right from the pot. Even like you can't with a lot of the paint brands that I even mentioned, but say like you were using GW paint, just going right from the pot onto the model is, you know, a bit of a no-no. But obviously you don't want to put the water or thinner into the pot itself. You want that to remain thick in the pot. You want to just take some out in yes. order to thin it. And so that's kind of why, yeah, it's like, you know, the thing to kind of look at then is one of the things the way essentially you most of the times can at least want to start is I always like to start kind of putting about, say, and I'm going to say this with the dropper bottle comparison, but yeah, if you put like one, like two drops of paint and then take like one droplet of water, which is also why I would recommend getting like an eyedropper for painting. You know, you can get them for like a couple bucks on Amazon or whatever, whether it's just like a little pipette or like a medicine eyedropper. Essentially, yeah, per 2 or 3 drops of paint, you put the one drop of water or paint thinner if you do want to get that. You can always just use water, though. I've never used just a standard, you know, acrylic paint thinner. I've only used airbrush thinner, which is technically the same, but like a little bit different. It's a little bit stronger. But yeah, like I've really never used, because I've always just used water, and that, because that always works. But yeah, so that's because acrylic paint is water based. So that's why that works so effectively. But yeah, so that's kind of usually the way you would want to look into that. And then from there, then you can kind of do the standard thing of like put some in your brush, kind of get rid of anything that's globbing out, and then put it onto your model. And one of the things you can do actually to figure out if you have too much or too little is, especially if you wear a glove on your hand, or maybe on the side of that, like if you have like the palette or the tile, take the amount you use, put a brush down it. If you see the water bead up, then you have too much water. If you brush down, like just do one brush stroke, and it all just kind of, it just does a perfect swipe, kind of no, so like some of the water that was on the edges kind of comes in a little, but then most of the paint stays there. That's kind of the happy medium you want to live in. There are all great tutorials out there for this in better detail, but that is the number one thing to look into is learn to thin your paint.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the other thing now is to kind of get an idea of learning the brush sizes. You don't need to get too many, but just kind of more of the realm of like, because really no matter what form of painting you do, you're going to need some type of brush at some point. And you will likely want a couple of like various sizes. You know, we talked about getting the cheap ones, but some of the good ones to just kind of know about, and you can cross-reference this like term with maybe the one that you're looking at, or like, and see how like the brush you're looking at, because even if the brush you're looking at the store doesn't have this term on it, you can look at the brush bristles and be like, does this look like that? You know, which is going to be base, layer, shade, and dry brushes. Those are the main ones you want to look into is for terms of like how 40K kind of modeling or Warhammer hobbyists kind of look at their brushes. They like those are like the four main ones you would kind of look into. There's obviously more layers upon where those brushes go, but those are the main ones where base is kind of your like thicker but not super long brush. Layer is your slightly longer but thinner amount of bristles brush. Your shade, which is long and relatively thicker bristles, but not like crazy. And then your dry brushes, which are generally very thick and wide. Might be like full circle, might just be like, might be crimped up at the end. It kind of just depends on the brand. But dry brushes are generally going to have really thick bristles. And it's good to at least have one of each of those. So like four brushes is kind of like your good jumping off point. But again, you can get those in various ways and not expensive ways either. Which then kind of goes in the final kind of baseline for standard painting, which is kind of learning the players and how to learning the layers. Sorry, not the players, but the layers and plan ahead. So like paint guides are great to kind of get a gauge on this. There are plenty out there, especially GW make like solid enough paint guides, at least show you what they mean by like, what are the layers of the model, right? Because then you can kind of choose whatever paints and whatnot you want to use. You don't have to follow them exactly. But then, and here's the thing, kind of when you fail to do this once, you'll have a great idea of like what I mean by like how you need to start kind of planning the layers. Because like once you kind of do it and then you know, for example, when you paint an armor, like an armor breastplate, right? And then say like you're like, oh, well, the cloth on this model is most of the model. Like there's a bunch of cloth and there's only like a breastplate and a little bit of shoulder pad. I'm going to do the thing on the bottom of it first and just go up, right? But what you should do is you should start with the breastplate and then do the cloth that's under the armor. And that reason is because if you paint your breastplate and you get some of it on the cloth, now you have this weird, for some reason your metal breastplate is bleeding onto cloth. And that's not just like, oh, the thing is broken. It just looks like it ripped almost, which wouldn't make it feel like metal. Whereas then if you layer the cloth part first and then do the metal on top of it, or sorry, if you do the, I did that, I said that backwards, said the wrong thing. If you do the breastplate first and then you do the cloth on top of it, A, if you get a little bit of the cloth coloring on top of it, then it's a tear from the cloth that maybe flapped up in the wind if you want to like reason it out to yourself. Otherwise, you can kind of just start more, because like if the something that's raised over, painting up to it is a lot easier than trying to paint on something raised on the model and go down. Because like it's kind of like cutting into something that has like a divot in it, right? It's really easy to like mark and kind of dig up. And then once you hit a ditch, you know, like, oh, that's my stopping point. Oh, when you're going up a piece of cloth and all of a sudden you hit this ridge that's like the breastplate, you know, oh, stop there. It's a lot harder to go down a slope and stop right at the base of the hill instead of going over and spilling over where that ridge and kind of line is. It's a little hard to necessarily say in speaking. When I have the visual, it'll make it a little bit easier. But essentially, usually the idea is, yeah, like think of it like walking up a hill. And say like there's a line right at the base of the hill, you know, it's a lot easier to stop right on that line if you go from the flat part of the ground and to the base of the hill, rather than coming from the very top of the hill and trying to make your way down and perfectly stop right on the line at the base of the hill. Momentum will carry you. Otherwise, let's talk about some of the other two kind of fancy ways of painting. So I'm gonna briefly touch on dry brushing, which you can paint a model entirely with dry brushing. It is generally a fairly simple technique. Like it is one of those things where it's like deceptively challenging, but like it kind of can have a decent like entry floor, right? It is a type of painting that can have a low floor but a high ceiling. But reaching that floor is still like a skill floor, right? You very much can fuck up getting up to the ground floor of dry brushing. And that usually comes to having just too much paint on your brush. Because as I mentioned, you'll still need most of the brushes that I mentioned before, but you don't need to thin your paints in nearly the same way. In dry brushing, you have the benefit of kind of being able to take the paint and kind of, like I had mentioned before, taking all the globs off and brushing it off onto a paper towel. Usually you want something like a paper towel or cloth. Usually paper towel is probably better because you don't want to ruin a cloth. But but you're not just getting rid of the globs of paint. You're getting rid of most of the paint. You want essentially just to have these dry pigment flakes. Just a little
bit of it, yeah.
Yeah, you want to have essentially these just dry pigment flakes that are ready to come off the brush, but are essentially like, it seems like most of the paint is just gone. And because you'll be surprised how much a dry brush will retain paint on it. Mm-hmm. So you need to like brush it off onto that paper towel quite a bit. But then once you go from that, then you can kind of just lightly, you're just kind of lightly going over the top of every part of the model, you know, just very lightly back and forth going over the areas of the model that you want to paint in that color. Now, this does have the main issue as well of really needing to know how you're going to plan ahead. Because unlike the previous form of painting where it kind of talked about how sometimes you maybe want to go from the top down, because then you can kind of not deal with that line. In this scenario, you really do kind of need to go from like the most base layer of paint you need and build up. Because when you're going to be, because you're going to start with like your darkest colors and you're going to dry brush those in, and then you're going to get lighter and lighter and lighter as you go to different areas of the model. And that can become tricky because, you know, all of a sudden you're like, shoot, the color is off on this, on the back. Like it's, I use the lighter color first or whatever, or it bled over. Then when you try to dry brush over it, you can still see that color through it because it's so thin. So that's kind of the thing you just need to like keep an eye out for while you're doing it. It can be just tricky, but it's for sure, honestly, a pretty easy way to get like really good contrasted colors. But I wouldn't recommend making your main technique until you try the next form of painting first to get maybe a little bit of skill into that dry brushing. And that is called the slap chop method. You're going to love my nuts.
When you need to take a break from the old day, you're going to use the slap chop method.
Yes. So this is like a super crazy easy method to get like really good looking paint jobs on your models. Like it's kind of a hack, and it's like stupid when you like do it the first time and you're like, holy shit, this is the best thing I've ever done. And like, it kind of feels like you didn't do much of anything, but, this is a great way to really get you into painting too, though. And it kind of will also teach you methods for all of the types of paintings one way or the other. It won't teach you maybe the best way to thin your paints, but you can get there for sure. But the main steps for it goes as you'll start by priming your model black. Generally, you know, in most forms of painting, you can kind of start your model at whatever color, you know, primer you want it to be. But with the way that slap chop works, you want to start with black. You could maybe do a darker gray, but the main idea is you're trying to get really deep contrasts. So black is generally the best because of that. Because then what you're going to do is you're going to dry brush gray in a more general kind of everywhere of the model, right? You're still going to do a very light dry brushing, right? You're not going to get really, you don't want to get deep, but you want to get on most portions of the model, saving pretty much just like the creases of like armor, or you know, if the character has rolls, looking at you, Nurgle models, just and essentially various or cracks or stuff, like anything that it can get where it kind of just like maybe has something beneath it or folds over, that's where you want it to remain black. And then you're going to take white and you're going to do it, you're going to dry brush again, but on the just like the top edges of the model. So even lighter than you did with the gray, and just kind of getting everywhere you want the color to really pop out. The gray will do most of your work. The white is to essentially create a bit of highlights in like the bigger ridges. So say it was like a Tyranid, you'd want it to be like the top of the armor, like back plates. you know, or if it was, you know, if it was a space marine, you really want it to be maybe like the white kind of on like the top corner of the pauldron, right? Think kind of starting to make you think about like, where would lighting be bright on this armor, right? That's kind of your thought process. So generally, mm-hmm. maybe like the very top pieces of the arm, the helmet, the arm and the gun, stuff like that, making those very lightly white, not a deep white, just very light. And then you just slather the thing in contrast paint, whatever color scheme you want. Just wherever you want these colors to go, use contrast paint and just slam it on there. Now, GW's like contrast painting method is like almost like make a like almost like have the contrast paint almost have a droplet coming off of your brush. Like it's like almost ready to drip, and then use that and just kind of like dab it. You're not brushing, you're just like dabbing the contrast paint and letting it flow. I don't like doing that on every model, especially really small ones that have a lot of ridges. I actually, in this instance, I like to not put as much into the brush, kind of if I need to, like, you know, put the brush into the paint, put one little like dab onto a paper towel and then put it on the model, because I feel like especially with the slap chop method, you'll get a lot more effective showing of that like contrasting color, like all those shadows and the darkness of the gray and the black areas will pop through a lot better because it's not as thick, even though it's contrast paint and it's already incredibly thin. Now, granted, and then from that, you know, and this is true even for any form of painting, you can then use shades or washes to like finalize any areas that maybe lost some of their darkness, or to just like further fit the feeling that you want them to have. Like if you want it to look like, you know, you can use like an earthy shade tone, like a more brown. If you want it to look like, you know, your model just kind of like went through the dirt and the mud on this jungle planet. Otherwise you could use like a black earth tone or like a black shade, like Nuln Oil is a very classic used one. And that, you know, that's like a black base. So that gives it like a very grim, dark feel, you know, kind of really seeps through the edges. That's kind of where you'll see a lot when you'll see like, especially like plenty of like gunpla painters, they'll use oils where they'll like dip it into the creases, or where you would use the markers to like get into the panel, like the in between the panels. People will sometimes just use those washes and then just like dry off or wipe off with like a Q-tip or a paper towel the like actual armor panel, but they'll leave the wash in the little slits of the armor. And then finally we have our final method, which is airbrushing. And while again we said, you know, this doesn't need to be where you start, it sure can be if you want to. It has a very low skill floor. So the thing about airbrushing is that it has a very low skill floor. Like honestly, like learning to airbrush is actually super easy. It's obviously you can screw it up. You can screw up any form of painting, right? Like you could easily make that 40K meme model that everybody has seen, and that's an abomination to mankind. But airbrushing does have a very low skill floor when you think about like the actual use of it. But what it doesn't have is a low monetary floor. That's its issue. Is it's an investment. It's a strong investment. It's not one that I can honestly and with good conscience recommend to people who are just getting into the hobby. I know it's sure. One of those things where like it could maybe keep you in the hobby if it would make you feel like a better painter, but it's hard for me to ever justify having somebody spend multiple hundreds of dollars out the gate on just the brush part, like on the painting part, when the models are already going to do that. Right? Unless you 3D print or, you know, whatever. That's a different story too, though. So again, while some would argue that airbrushing is maybe the main way that you should paint, to me, again, the main way of painting is the one that you can enjoy and afford. And I don't think airbrushing is always the most affordable. I also do find issues with it with smaller models. For example, when painting my sisters, I tried it and I just couldn't find a great use with it. It just was too small of a canvas, and I felt like it just bled over too much into areas that if I just used my contrast paint with a brush, I would be more accurate. And so that was kind of my issue with it. And given that my other model, my other army that I have are just about as smaller, if not smaller, than the sisters' models are, it's not looking good for them either. Maybe for their vehicles, but not for the models themselves. But if you do want to get into airbrushing, there is a couple of things that you obviously will need and want to know. So the first thing is definitely that you will want to know about kind of highlighting and the brushes that can paint. You'll want to make sure you do have brushes to paint the really small details like armor trim and eyes. Shading paints also will help cover any like early learning teething errors that you run into with the airbrush. Sure. You know, kind of creating shade and throwing null oil all over it will generally hide some mistakes. Not all of them, just some. but otherwise, unlike what the internet will say, you also do not need to get a whole spray dome for your airbrush. Acrylic paint is water-based. It is not spray paint, nor is it enamel. Both of those do need ventilation. Do not use a rattle can spray paint or enamel paints without some form of like mask or protection or well-ventilated area.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Those are dangerous. Do not do it. The only thing you need, though, for your acrylic airbrush paint that 99% of people are going to... Okay, like 95% of people are going to use, especially anybody who's starting out, should be 100%. All you really need is like a box or like taped up paper that goes behind the model, so that you just don't get paint all over the wall or table that you're painting in front of or on, right? Mm-hmm. That's the only thing, right? That paint is still going to go somewhere. It doesn't need to be ventilated out and away from you, right? Because again, it's like the thing about air paints is that like that paint will go from the brush, like from the airbrush to the thing, and then it like essentially just falls down. It just doesn't have, it's not lighter than air. It's just made that way for a moment as it blends with the water or the thinner, right? But then it thickens out and it goes down, which is why it will absolutely get all over your table or wall. So that's what you need. You don't need, you, and like I literally use the cover of the airbrush, like the cheap airbrush that I got. I use the box cover behind it. And I'll just do that on my kitchen table.
Yeah.
So it just goes into the box cover, and it doesn't get anywhere else. My lungs are fine. Anybody smell burnt toast? And while not every paint that's out there needs to be thinned the same way, using airbrush thinner is generally the thing that you will always want to do with the airbrush. I mean, you especially just cannot use normal acrylic paint without thinning it in some capacity. Like there's no argument to it. It's just, you got to do it. Mm-hmm. Generally airbrush thinner will do the best, but you technically can use water, and still get it to work. But yeah, like, cause the thing is the airbrush will clog, and it's a huge pain in the ass to like get it out. So you want to make sure that you're doing that. Similarly, the other way to deal with the clogging or to prevent it is to use the proper amount of air pressure or PSI with it. And that can be a bit of a learning curve a little bit, but generally, you know, you're really only looking to like paint at about like 35-ish PSI most of the time. You only need to go any further or less depending on the thinness of the paint. Right. For example, if you made the paint fairly thin, but you don't want to put another like dip of paint in it and it's like just too thin, you could do it at a lower pressure and you will get better results. It's like, so it's not so splattery, stuff like that. But honestly, you learn that just from experience. There's not like a great, like, here's your number one way. It's just like, you'll start to figure out when you put the one paint you're putting in there, how much you need to thin it by, and then what is the, you know, but like where around 35-ish PSI do you need to set it?
Yeah. You got to be comfortable with the idea that the first time you do it it's probably not going to be perfect. You know, it's going to take a little, you're going to have to do it a few times to really get an idea of exactly where you need it to be.
No, but that's where, like, honestly, just even if you do a pretty light job, you'll honestly probably still have a lot of cool experiences with it, even from the get-go. So it's a great option. It's just expensive. And that's why it's just like, it's not my first recommendation, but for sure it's worth thinking about. And if anything, I know some hobby shops, in LGS by myself actually even have, an airbrush station. You can try them out. So see if anybody that you, like a GW store or anything else has something that you can try them out with. I don't think GW stores generally do because they don't have much air paint, but maybe. Otherwise, see if your LGS has something like that, and then you can give it a shot without having to do the investment. You can see if you feel that it's worth it. All right. And then kind of finally, my last kind of just note is, you know, you may ask, you know, hey, I hear people talking about oils and enamel paints, but should I worry about that? And that answer is a very clear no.
Not yet.
Oil paints are great for getting shades into very small details. One of the things that you will see, which looks incredibly satisfying on Instagram reels and TikToks, is somebody will like take an oil onto a brush and they'll go like right between the armor trim and like the pauldron of a Space Marine shoulder, or between the armor panels of a Tau, you know, like the battle suit, and they'll like just like dab this like oil paint in it, and it's just like spreads out in a perfect line and creates this like perfect pencil line shadow. Don't start there. That takes a lot more practice than you think it does. So don't try to start with that. Just slather the thing in Nuln oil. You'll be okay. Honestly, most people live and die by it. Really, the only time that you ever really need to even look at either of these options is if you're trying to get to the point where you're trying to win a golden demon. And you're not doing that from the start. And then it's similarly, that's the thing. Like, and that goes very much true for enamels as well, right? Like, honestly, I just don't really even see the point. Like, I've heard people use enamels and they think they're great. But like, honestly, like when you're at a table, and especially then also like when you're looking at it through a camera, like unless they like hyper zoom in or whatever, like you're just not going to see it. You know, the benefit you're going to get from it just isn't going to be there. And honestly, use something like an enamel paint into a model, you're not going to want to potentially risk damaging it by going and playing it. And this is a podcast about going and playing the game. So I don't recommend it really at any point, but especially not to start, obviously.
Speaking from the Gunpla side of things, it's like there's not a lot of advantages to enamel paint that aren't already present in other types of paint. I think it really just kind of comes down to, it's really nice to work with when you're using a brush because of how slowly it dries. You have a lot of time to kind of like, if you make like a mistake, there's a lot of time to be able to kind of make corrections to that. And it generally is going to last a really long time. But outside of that, like there's not a lot of huge advantages to using it.
Right. And that's actually a big thing to note as well, is especially if you're really early on with a paint job, right? And say you make an egregious error, alcohol, acrylic paint.
For the paint, not for you.
Acrylic paint hates rubbing alcohol.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't survive. And so like if you need to just like, especially when it's fresh, because it's not recommended to like leave a plastic model, you know, in alcohol, much like you wouldn't want to leave anything like, especially just like standard plastic in alcohol for a long time. You know, like the plastic bottle that the alcohol absolutely is in is a very special type of plastic. Kind of like how your glue, your super glue, can be in a plastic bottle without it sticking to the bottle that it's in. Yeah, like that's the whole thing, is like the while you don't want it to sit there for a while, like if you make a mistake, just like put some rubbing alcohol on like an old toothbrush, or like just have it like in a cup and just like swirl it in for a bit and like rub it off with like a Q-tip. Mm-hmm. I would recommend a Q-tip for a lot of these things because like it's just easier and you won't break it. Because if you use a napkin, you might accidentally, you know, snap something off the model because a paper towel or napkin is going to be kind of big compared to the model. But yeah, like you can kind of rub it off quick and kind of get a fresh start. You may need to reprime the area too, but you likely kind of probably can get away with it. And just, you'll be able to start from the primed spot just fine. But that's like a good thing for either just cleanup if you ever spill your acrylic paint, or if you, or if you just need to make like a really early, like kind of switch up. You're like, ah, shoot. No, I wanted to use this for that armor panel. Shoot. Dip. It can save you. There are paint removers out there. I've used them. They are tough for a lot of using with multiple models because you may need it to sit in said kind of paint removal liquid for a while. So there's probably better paint removing alternatives out there, but most of the time it's kind of one of those things where like, hey, if you start with a scheme, especially if like you've painted a whole army one scheme already, then like you really need to think long and hard why you would want to change it.
Yeah.
But otherwise from that, it's just kind of like, yeah, if you make an error, you just want to, you started with, because my scenario was I did one unit in a paint scheme. I did them as the Sisters of the Bloody Rose. And then I came up with the concept that I went with later on. I was like, well, shoot, I want to do this. But the first unit, like the first 10 models I have were this color. And this won't just cover over it, right? This will blend and not look the same. So I need to start over. And I don't want to just layer it on top. Because I also didn't thin my paints very well with my first set of models. So like I said, you really do live and learn. You know, that's kind of the thing, right? It's just like you can use it when you really need it. But otherwise, like rubbing alcohol does do well enough to just like destroy acrylic paint. But other than that, that's pretty much about it when it comes to all the kind of extra paint tips that I wanted to give out.
Yeah, for sure.
Move over, Linus, and your tech tips. We're here for hair to camera paint tips. Which is a double entendre because of brush tips. And that's a sign that this episode needs to be over. anything you want to give before we head out?
When you're starting out on painting, it looks cool. It always looks, it's like super cool. But don't worry about things like weathering just yet. It's mm-hmm. That's something that you kind of build up to. And also, if you're doing, you know, if you're just getting started into painting, knowing the basics is going to then help you with figuring out where you can apply techniques to make the weathering look better. You got to know what it looks like in peak condition before you can really figure out what's going to make it look good when you're doing like battle damage on like a vehicle or like armor or things like that.
Right. That also reminds me. I didn't talk about basing, which is essentially effectively putting your model in a scene, if you will, right? Like, for example, if you have a model and it's just on the black, you know, plastic base stand, it looks like there's just kind of nothing around. But if you can get, sometimes you can get like pieces that, you know, like that almost kind of like essentially what is like almost is like things of sand or like gravel almost like looking stuff. Or you can get technical paint, which is essentially just, it's technically paint and will dry, but you just like slather, you just kind of slather it on like a butter onto the base of the model. Mm-hmm. And then it will harden to make like a stony substance or whatever it's meant to look like. And you can also put on like little fake bushes and stuff like that. Some models will come with like extra base like things, like they'll have the model itself will have like a stone pillar that the model is standing on, or like a bunch of rocks, or like a pathway that and rubble that the model is already standing on. In which case, they've based the model for you and you're good to go. You just need to paint the stuff that it's standing on. But yeah, like technically that is something that is a part of the hobby. And basing models is a very cool look, right? Like having a based model,
it's pretty based.
Yeah, it's not pretty based.
It's pretty based.
Yeah. And, you know, you'll see on the screen when I, at this point now that I have remembered to talk about this, you like I did, you know, in my recently painted Warplock Engineer for my Skaven army that I got with the Skaventide box. Like, that's like a great example of like there is stuff with it, but it's still needed. It still needed some extras to get like based onto, right, to give it more theming to it than just it being like, hey, he's standing on this like weird tube thing, but then is also clearly just on the model base. So it's like he's in that tube thing, but that's also sitting in stone, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it makes it, at least it gives it an effect, and it's nice, and it gives, it's always good, and that's kind of why they encourage it, right? It's, it gives a diorama feel to your models, and that's one of the benefits of hobbying, right? Is that now if you want to go play 40k games with your friends and you don't want to worry about basing, then just don't. Some companies, even honestly, they just make little discs that you glue onto the bases, and then you put your model on top of it, and it's like a, essentially just like a paper disc that just has like a picture of like a jungle floor or mm-hmm. like a desert. And it's like, and technically that counts. So it's like, there you go. You're based. You're good. All right. And that'll do it for this episode.
I can't think of a more based way to end it.
All right. Tune in next week where we will be hitting up something, and soon enough, we're going to be starting to play some games around here. Yeah, using the knowledge. Well, we're going to learn knowledge and then we'll use it because it's different. Mm-hmm. You don't need to know the lore to actually play the game, but you know, it gives you good thematicism. All right. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.